The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7 Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this May 27th, 2026. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. An overcast yet humid day in the Auburn Opelika area, and believe it or not, according to the unnamed weather application used on my unnamed cellular technological device, which is the devil, by the way, damn technology, it does show, quote, rainy conditions are expected from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. with thunderstorms expected at 3 p.m. And so don't take me as your weatherman, but you can do with that what you will. And I guess on that topic too, my goodness, don't look at the weekend, because there's a lot of really high percentages with some clouds and lightning strikes that are expected throughout the weekend. But we'll get there when we get there. And that just means you get to hunker down with us here on the show, here on ESPN 106.7. I'm Christian Griffin here with you in the studio. And my goodness, is there a whole lot to get to on the show today. The day is here. The Field of 64, the college baseball selection show, if you will, for On the Line is here. All of hour number two will be consumed by that. Myself and our good buddy Jack Hutton is going to make his way into the studio and get his thoughts. All of hour number one is going to be college football, and it's going to be a whole lot of fun today. And I say we because I've talked about hour number two, but here in the studio in hour number one and hour number two as well, full time, can't get him out of here, the man across from me, Mr. Trip Upton. Happy hump day to you, sir. Have your fingers fallen off from all of the research and the typing that you've been doing over the past couple of days?
Close. Happy Wednesday, happy hump day. I gotta be prepared. I gotta be, you know, this is kind of the first big On the Line moment I'm getting to help out with, in terms of, you know, not, you know, no March Madness, no college football selection show. So I you know, you gotta make your debut with a bang. And so I have enough where, you know, I feel confident talking and going wherever. We still have some stuff to finish up, but it's looking promising. I think it's going to be a good second hour. But if you want to be a part of the conversation, the first hour, phone lines will be open the entire first hour.
Yeah.
If you want to join the conversation about football, something about baseball, or anything else, 334-321-1390. Make sure to call that, and we'll pick up. We'll put you right here on the line. Again, no text box, no Jacob Goins. He's hopefully having better weather than we are, down in the Gulf of Mexico, Gulf of America, Gulf of wherever. That's where he is. So no text box there, but still phone lines are open, 334-321-1390.
Yeah, did you say you have 30 pages of notes between these 64
yeah.
teams? And this is RPI, this is strength of schedule, this is a little bit of breakdown for every single team as well?
So what it'll be, and we'll get more into what that looks like, it's a lot of just, you know, kind of just some basic facts, just some highlighted stuff, like, okay, this is something to talk about. Got some RPI and strength of schedule numbers, kind of what their quads breakdown are looking like, and then just like a stat or two, like, for example, I'm just off the top of my head with Auburn. Auburn is top three in ERA, number one in whip, and number one in walks per nine innings.
There you go. So we can do with that what you will in terms of all of every single bit of information that we will be able to get to you in the college baseball bracket show that we will have coming up in hour number two. And how funny is it to think of, we say the field of 64, and we say that as if we have to preface now of it's baseball. Well, starting, I guess, even a couple of years ago when they went to 68, you didn't even have to necessarily specify, but even more so going to 76 teams in March Madness. The field of 64, the baseball tournament will just be its own thing. You don't need to specify anything like that. But all of that is coming up in a really, really fun hour number two, and we hope you'll join us on that side of things. Special notes for tomorrow. We won't spend as much time breaking down Auburn's specific regional here today. That's going to be a lot of what tomorrow's show is consisted of, and I promise you folks, you're going to want to be a part of it. So this is a really, really cool opportunity that we've worked really, really hard for over the past couple of days, and there's been a lot of work that's gone through multiple different parties to try and get a lot of this communication. And so we are really, really looking forward to bringing you tomorrow's show. But tomorrow is tomorrow, and my goodness, if you miss a single day in terms of what the heck goes on in college football, you are missing out. So that is what hour number one is going to be absolutely consumed by, because there is breaking news. There is so much news in the college football world, and that is what we are diving into here today. We have a Senators meeting talking about college football. We have proposed rules with coaches, with players, with professionals. We have all of that. We have the SEC coaches being misled in terms of what it looks like with a 9-game conference schedule, and how coaches agreed or thought they agreed on something, but it turns out this may have been something that slid underneath the rug, and now the SEC coaches are quite frustrated about it. But there is some agreeance with some SEC teams and some SEC athletic directors in terms of what college football playoff is going to look like. However, I don't think that there's any agreement. I don't think that there's any sort of resolve quite yet. We have a lot of quotes from these coaches that are having their SEC spring meetings down in Destin. We have Alex Golish comments, and then we have the comments from Kirby Smart, because everybody has their comments, but Kirby's are ones that are continuing to grow in popularity, but he is one of those outspoken leaders that we talk about having a whole lot and needing to be one of those main guys. And so we are planning on really, really being able to dive into that here in hour number one. Looks like we have a phone call we might be getting to here in just a moment. But while Tripp handles that, my goodness, the college football Senators, or the Senators rather, have met for college football. And this is an article that Pete Nakos released about 3 hours ago with On3, entitled it, Senators Introduce the Bipartisan College Sports Bill with Transfer, Coaching Movement, and Enforcement. And this is Ted Cruz, a Republican from Texas, Maria Cantwell, a Democrat from Washington, not diving into that side of things, but they have agreed on a bipartisan legislation that would usher in sweeping reform to college sports and bringing a narrow antitrust exemption to the NCAA and introducing transfer enforcement. This is all, again, the sources from On3. And my goodness, partner, where do you want to start when it comes to all, this entire article? I mean, there is a Lane Kiffin rule. There is an eligibility rule. There is a professional rule. You pick and choose where we want to start.
I think we probably should start with the one that I think is going to affect Auburn the most, because I don't think the Lane Kiffin rule is going to affect Alex Golish and Auburn, because I don't see him taking another job unless it is like the Ohio State job or something like that. Let's talk about 5-5. I think that's because that not only matters for football, that matters across all collegiate athletics, and I think that matters a ton when it comes to Auburn, and I think that that is going to be an interesting part of what the rules could state, because that's a complete flip. You're adding a full year. You're getting rid of the idea of a red shirt,
yeah,
and stuff like that. That's very – again, that's just a drastic change by itself.
So the bill would establish a 5-year eligibility rule for college athletes, while it was also – prohibit professional players for participating in college athletics, and here's the kicker, if they have previously earned compensation beyond prize money. The legislation would grant antitrust protections around transfers, eligibility, and the compensation cap, while also giving the College Sports Commission the ability to enforce its rules without legal change. And so that tells me, talking about beyond prize money, this is a legitimate conversation in terms of professionals in the United States. This also tells me that this is going to be something along the lines of European professionals and overseas professionals, because there is a lot that happens. And again, obviously, you're seeing the SEC teams and just college basketball in general, Auburn being a big-time one, where they have two working their way from overseas to be on Auburn's roster this upcoming year. This is something that could heavily, heavily enforce that. Whether that is the start of this upcoming year, you would kind of hope not, based off of the transfer portal essentially being closed and teams having their roster, but something working its way to the very, very near future of no professionals whatsoever. If you have signed a bonus, if you have taken your way to the NBA, or if you have played overseas, no European players, no former professionals will be able to play at the college level. And that also works its way into the 5 for 5, which we have talked a whole lot about. Of, you mentioned it, no red shirts. It's going to simply be, you have 5 years to play 5 years. If you are healthy all 5 years, lucky for you, you get 5 years of eligibility. If you miss a year because you have a torn ACL, I'm sorry, you have 5 years. There's no red shirts, no medical red shirts, anything like that. Your name is able to be played for 5 years. And we've talked about how that is very harsh in terms of, again, the few and far between of the people who move back across the country to go be with their family, or the crazy medical situations that just have to be taken care of, right? But it's those that have taken advantage of every single one of the opportunities that the NCAA has given. And I can't believe that makes it sound like I'm overly supporting the NCAA, but just in terms of what needs to happen, you feel like it almost has to be concrete, black and white. There is no gray area. There is no working its way around this. We've messed around for long enough. We cannot escape these consequences without putting our foot down. And if it messes up a couple of generations, or maybe even just a couple, or I guess college generations in terms of the 4 year differences, if that's what it takes, so be it. But we got to find a way to make a difference.
No, I agree. And I do like that they, as someone, I think this is a smaller part of what you just said and what the legislation would have. But I think it does matter for certain sports, maybe not football and basketball and baseball. But the thing about prize money, where you have certain, like tennis, you get money for winning tournaments.
Right.
Horse, you know, equestrian, you get money for winning tournaments. I think that, like, you know, having those protections in there for those smaller sport athletes matters a ton.
Right.
And I think that that is a way to be able to get it in a sense that it's going to help that. But, it's going to hurt the big three of football, basketball, and baseball, with basketball being the big one, just with the amount. Maybe some baseball, too, with some international players. But, again, if you're 25, I just don't think you should. I understand with the Auburn position of it. I don't understand why you should be competing against 18 and 19-year-olds after playing against, you know, NBA preseason teams and playing in international against former NBA players and making money off that professionally.
Yeah, and you mentioned the prize money that you feel like needs to be mentioned, because so many of these tournaments, and you even look at what Auburn is doing with Baylor in terms of NIL and moving that game to Atlanta, not only to help out Auburn University, but a part of that money goes to the NIL prize pool and things like that, and going and playing in Las Vegas in the players era. Now you have the players 8, and then you have the normal tournament a week after that, and all of those have the prize money of I mean millions of dollars towards the winner, and then obviously you have the second and third place stipends in there as well. And so that's obviously a very, very big part of this rule that we are talking about. Again, senators have introduced bipartisan rules in terms of how they are trying to discuss fixing college football and college sports just in general. Another one would be the Lane Kiffin rule that they have, funny enough, quoted it as. But it is essentially, it's barring coaches from leaving their team before the season ends. And I think that is a fantastic option. My one counter argument is the schedule does not help you whatsoever, because you are playing games so late and you're having to do so much. You're making it to essentially, okay, is this regular season only? Like, does the bowl season change anything? Because obviously, I mean, John Summerall was asked about that earlier this week during his media availabilities of, okay, what would it look like if you were able to not, if you weren't able to coach Tulane? And Florida was saying, no, you can't do that. And he said, okay, well, I wouldn't have taken it because I wanted to finish up what I was doing, but I was working two jobs for 3 or 4 weeks. And I think that is a big time problem just when you look in terms of the calendar of, okay, there needs to honestly be some sort of dead period when it comes to the coach is able to make decisions, the transfer portal, things like that, because everything is so crammed, ironically being more spaced out than it feels like it ever has been. And the spring portal window not being a factor anymore obviously plays a little bit of a factor, but the Lane Kiffin rule, not allowing coaches to leave their team before the season ends, I think is a very, very big plus in terms of this conversation.
No, I agree. And but I think that the problem with that is looking at it not from a, because I think a lot of times people think that coaches are barred by the same restrictions that athletes are in terms of coaching, in terms of job security. With coaches, you could correct me if I'm wrong, I'm sure you could not go from one school to another and coach that season. But we all know that every school is negotiating even before they fire their head coach. I mean, look at the rumors of after Brian Harsin was fired at Auburn, there was rumors that Lane Kiffin was on campus the next week.
Yeah.
And I just look at that and I see that it's hard to restrict that because it happens so under the wire. And I think it would not only hurt programs like Ole Miss, where it was like, if Lane Kiffin stays for the playoffs, he's probably getting guys like Trinidad Chambliss into the portal, guys like Kawan Lacey to go to the portal, and all of their top players, because he's around them more, to able to be like, hey, I'm, you know, because his job security and what he gets paid for is not directly, is not helping Ole Miss win, it's helping LSU win at that point. And I think that that's what that would turn into. In a perfect world, that doesn't happen, but it happens. So I think that's a, I like it, but I think that there would have to be some kind of guardrails of like, well, if you leave and you still have to be the head coach, you cannot have contact, or maybe that there's a certain period where players cannot jump into the portal to go follow their head coach. Like you look at high school, they restrict, I know in Georgia, they restrict certain players. If your dad gets, or your coach gets hired at a college, let's say you play for Buford, your dad becomes an assistant at Georgia Tech, or your head coach becomes an assistant at Georgia Tech, you have to wait a year or two before you go to Georgia Tech, because that would be illegal recruiting at that point. I believe so. I could be wrong, but I know that I feel like that's a rule, because it's like, I remember that being a rule with Clemson, or Cartersville, when their head coach, Joey King, left to go be an assistant at Coastal Carolina. No players could go to Coastal Carolina. For a year or two, it's certain restriction, because at that point it's like you recruited your entire high school.
Right. Huh. I guess you don't necessarily think about it in the high school works, but no way that high school teams are being punished for illegal recruiting, especially not in the AHSAA or anything. What?
No
way whatsoever. No. We're breaking down the Senators, again, introducing a bipartisan college sports bill, talking about 5 for 5, talking about professionals, talking about coaching, and one that you feel like everybody breathes a sigh of relief about in terms of just the one-year rentals that you have to have in this bipartisan, the bill that they are making. It says, quote, athletes would be allowed to transfer only once if the legislation is approved, and currently players can transfer freely with no limit on how many times they may do so. And now we're at the point of, even if you transfer during the transfer portal, that doesn't even mean anything, because you're seeing coaches go and take committed kids from the transfer portal on to go play for other teams. And so a big time relief on that side of things. And athletes would be allowed to transfer only once if the legislation is approved. We're going to take a break. We will come back and talk about what may be the worst ? Thing in terms of this bill regarding the SEC and the Big Ten, the big boys that want to have the say, that want to have the king of the king's seat of the table every single time a decision is made. Why a rule in this bill may not be the best thing that the Big Ten and the SEC want to hear. We'll continue on talking about SEC athletic directors and how the 9-game conference schedule was supposed to be complemented with a rule change, and it hasn't happened, and how coaches feel misled. We'll talk about that when we come back. We're just off and running here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
This is Evan Cohen from Unsportsmanlike, and you're listening to On the Line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7.
From revolution to rockets, from dusty frontiers to city skylines, these are the moments that shaped America. This is the American Minute presented by Bucks Island. July 4th, 1776. Inside Philadelphia's Pennsylvania State House, 56 men prepared to sign a document unlike any the world had ever seen. A declaration that 13 small colonies would break away from the most powerful empire on earth. If they failed, it would be treason, punishable by death. John Hancock signed first boldly, then the others followed, farmers, merchants, lawyers. Ordinary men risking everything. Their words radical for the time, that all men are created equal. Now, 2.5 centuries later, that idea still echoes. One defining moment that shaped the country we call home. This American Minute is presented by Bucks Island, family owned and operated, serving boaters since 1948. Online at bucksisland.com.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
Very soon, we're going to have a breaking news banner that we can play coming out of break because... Yeah, something along those lines, because every single time we go to break and it feels like we're going to talk about something else pops up. And we are going to continue this conversation talking about the senators introducing a bipartisan college sports bill. We talked about the Lane Kiffin rule. We talked about the eligibility, the 5-5. They talked about the professional side of things and the transfer portal changes. We are also going to dive into a proposal that may not be good for the SEC or the Big Ten, just in terms of the control that they want to have. But during a break, we got game times for Auburn football. And you want to talk about being fired up on a Wednesday afternoon. We knew that the game in Atlanta against Baylor was a 2:30 Central Time game on ABC. You then go back home. You stay at home.
Yeah, you're dude, what are you talking about?
Yeah, you stay at home. But Southern Miss comes to Jordan-Hare Stadium, and that is either a 6:30 or a 6:45 Central Time kick on ESPNU or the SEC Network. You know who Auburn has after that?
Is it this team that I'm typing notes for baseball?
It is, in fact.
The Florida Gators?
It is, in fact, the Florida Gators. They make their way in week 3 to Jordan-Hare Stadium, and it has been released that it's under the lights on ESPN. A 6 o'clock Central Time start inside Jordan-Hare Stadium between the Florida Gators and the Auburn Tigers. That is going to be absolutely incredible. And shout out that Auburn has night games when it's going to be absolutely disgustingly hot outside. So wins on that side of things, but how nice is it early on in games that, man, are going to mean so, so much under the lights inside Jordan-Hare Stadium?
Yes, there are sometimes when it feels like the administration – and you know, some choices are few and far between, especially with the Baylor game being in Atlanta. With having that stuff, I understand the NIL part of it. But I like it. I like that it's going to be under the lights. And that's where Auburn's environment is the best. That's where you're going to be able to bring in recruits and say, hey, this is the Jordan-Hare Stadium experience. Not, you know, almost losing to Missouri on at 12.
I just got a text, too, that's pretty awesome. Said that the Florida game at night inside Jordan-Hare is the 20th anniversary of Trey Smith's blocked punt and the flip into the end zone. That is going to be absolutely incredible. That's If you need anything else to get fired up, we'll talk about the negative ways to fire you up and what the SEC doesn't necessarily like. But just in a nutshell, when you want to get fired up about college football and Auburn football, that will definitely do that. Again, 2:30 against Baylor, which we knew of in Atlanta. 6:30 or 6:45 Central Time against Southern Miss, either ESPNU or SEC Network. And then Under the Lights in prime time on ESPN, Auburn and Florida, 6 o'clock inside Jordan-Hare Stadium. So definitely wanted to get those out while we had a few moments, but do want to continue the conversation and wrap up this side of things in terms of the bipartisan college sports bill that the senators have been introducing. A couple of them have met and have proposed this for college sports to try and benefit the longevity of the NCAA and just the longevity of what we know and love as college sports. But there is one that may not benefit the SEC and the Big Ten in terms of the command and the control that they want to have. And it's diving into the You mind playing that breaking news return that you have? Perfect. Thank you. The bill is also going to include the opportunity for the schools to collectively basically combine their rights and pool all of their rights together. P-O-O-L, not P-U-L-L. But collectively pool all of their rights. And so a minimum threshold of 75% of the 138 FBS teams must agree or must disagree in terms of reaching these rights if there want to be changes. And so the SEC and the Big Ten have basically always held out their the stiff arm against the little brother on, no, if decisions want to be made, they're going to have to come through us. Yet that being said, this article that Pete Nakos wrote, according to On3, says that even if the Big Ten and the SEC did not sign off on any sort of agreement, yet the rest of the FBS did, there are not enough teams in the SEC or the Big Ten that would make it less than 75%. And so college football would basically take the majority and say, yeah, well, just because you don't want it doesn't matter. Everybody else does. And so because of that, we're going to rock with it.
No, I agree. And my take on it is someone that did not grow up as an SEC and a Big Ten fan. I like the respecting of the Power Four status of the ACCs and the Big 12s of the world. But I think it from a perspective of you're going to have different teams on different networks is going to give different people the opportunity to watch them. Yes, do I miss having the consistent, all right, at 2:30 every day, it's going to be the SEC game of the week. Yeah, that would be different. But I think it helps everyone else out, but hurts the Big Ten and the SEC.
We'll see how it works. A minimum of 75% of 138 FBS teams must agree to pool and combine their rights, which may not be in favor of the Southeastern Conference. Music kicking us out of here. When we come back, we're going to dive into some quotes on the SEC coaches talking about college football expansion and how they may have been, quote, misled in terms of a 9-game conference schedule. All of that when we return.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for being here with us and spending a little time with us here on this Wednesday afternoon. Just got done breaking down a lot of what On3 has been reporting throughout the day. We're going to continue talking about a different side of it, but talking about a bill that the senators have introduced to try and help out the college sports world and try and make some changes that they feel necessary in terms of benefiting, again, not only the NCAA, but the athletes in there as well. But we move on to something else that has been a very popular topic in terms of college football, and that is the expansion topics with the college football playoff and how the SEC is in agreement, but not in agreement, but only if certain things work their way, and if they don't work their way, then we don't want to do it. And you feel like that's kind of the way that it's always been, right? And it's, again, goes back to what we just talked about of how certain rules may not be beneficial to what the SEC and the Big Ten are wanting. The one thing they did agree on a couple of days ago is they agreed to play their conference games in the second to last week of the season. And so that you can rest in peace the cupcake games before your big time rivals, because you feel like that is one thing that the Big Ten, and it's frustrating that because of what the Big Ten wanted, and because they always pointed the finger of, look at these weeks when we're playing, when it's Oregon and Ohio State, you're over here playing Alabama Southern Penitentiary in week 11. But when you're looking at the entire strength of schedule as a whole, I don't think there's too much of an argument. But the athletic directors did agree to play their conference games in the second to last week in the SEC. And so we'll give that one applause, because that, it feels like, has been the one major topic of agreement in terms of the SEC. Because as of a couple of hours ago, there has been a whole lot of talkings, and this is from McMurphy again on three as well, talking about SEC coaches possibly being misled by a 9-game conference schedule. Again, this is something that we will see for the first time this year. Otherwise, it's always been the 8. In the SEC, finally, the Big Ten called it that, you know, we bullied the SEC into making this decision. And we kind of thought that that may have been the case, that they were trying to get uniformity throughout all of college football. Well, it actually goes to show the SEC coaches may have been misinformed, because there was a lot of clarification and a lot of communication that if the SEC agreed to go to a 9-game conference schedule, the college football playoff would agree to move to 16 teams. But only one of those things has changed. The SEC is going to play 9-game schedules, or 9-game conference schedules, that is. And right now, we're still looking at a 12-team playoff. And so the SEC coaches' meetings down in Destin have brought out some of the frustrations. It feels like it's pre-SEC media days with the drama going on.
Yeah, I mean, you look at quotes, you look at the vote note, like when they voted on to see if the SEC championship was going to be continued. I think a lot of coaches voiced support of that, but understandably, it was like, hey, this is something that we like, but might hurt us in the long run. But you look at the quotes about it are really interesting. Like, for example, we were talking about Mike Elko's quote before the show, where he basically said, as a fan, as a lover of college football, I hate it. It's too easy to get in the playoff. As a coach, I want it to be 40 teams so that they'll never fire me and I'll make it every year. Like, that, I think that is the prevailing opinion that you're kind of hearing of, like, the, we hate this for college football, but it benefits us, so why not?
It was John Sumrall that brought up a lot of the opinions in terms of what the committee and what everybody thought was going to happen. He said, quote, talking to the other coaches, they felt like by going to 9 games, they felt as if we were going to shift to the playoff model of 16 teams, but it didn't. He said they felt misled. This was what Sumrall told Brett McMurphy. Eli Drinkwitz also shared a very similar feeling, this article says, saying, quote, the discussion was about going to an 8 or 9 game schedule. I remember being so anxious about it. Like, when are we going to discuss this? When are we going to actually be able to vote? And it took us 6 years to get to 9 games. And so one thing has changed and one has not. And whether you want to look at it in terms of a good thing that Auburn or the SEC teams and Auburn being one of those, they're going to play 9-game conference schedules. That's one way of looking at it, but they were expecting the conference to really fight for a 16-team playoff just to allow more automatic bids, more conference bids in there for the SEC as well. And you look at, man, you mentioned a whole lot of these quotes from SEC teams when just talking about college football playoff expansion. And starting off, what you mentioned in Mike Elko saying, basically paraphrasing, obviously, talking about, yeah, well, as a fan, I hate it because, man, it's so easy and it makes it to where everybody's going to get in. But as a coach, you're telling me all I have to do is win 8 or 9 games and I'll never be fired because I'm going to make the college football playoff every year? Sign me up. There's another coach that talked all about how, man, we're not in a world that makes decisions based off the betterment of everybody. It's the benefit of the individual. And so how could you not be in approval of the expansion just in terms of what it could mean for you as a coach and you as a paycheck and so many different ways of looking at it. Are you a fan? I guess we've never gotten your thoughts on that side of things. Are you an expansionist? Are you an anti-expansionist? And if anybody else has thoughts out there in terms of the expansion, in terms of the SEC and the coaches saying they were misled about a playoff expansion, again, get your thoughts out here at 334-321-1390. But your thoughts on when it happened initially from 4 to 12 and then now the discussion of whether that's 16, whether that's 24, or just make the entire regular season a college football playoff?
I mean, if you ask me, I think 4 was around the right number. I think just the watering down of the regular season I don't know if that was a worth it trade-off so that we get better matchups in bowl season, as well as there are more opportunities for teams like the Florida States of the world, where when they go undefeated and still miss out, I was furious about that. And I was like, this is why we're getting a 12-team playoff. Personally, if you ask me, I kind of liked a 6-to-8-team model where you had Power 4 champions all make it and then a couple at-large bids for the Notre Dames of the world. I got to look back on my old, whatever I thought was right. But I think 16 is way too much. I think 12 is already pushing it, and having 16 or potentially 24, I just think that we've lost the plot a little bit in terms of that personally. So I think 2 was great because at least if you didn't make it, it made sense. 4, because it became subjective, I think was perfect. But then I think that we getting to 12 was way too much.
This article from New York Times says, among major conferences, the SEC is the only league to not offer public support of a 24-team model. Both the Big Ten and the SEC must agree to the changes of the playoff format. Without consensus, the events will continue to run as the 12-team status quo. It follows on by saying, if the league emerges from its annual meetings in the Sandestin Hilton this week in support of the 24-team model, which is, again, where all of this drama and all of these conversations have been sparked and revamped, essentially. It says the only question is remaining, how quickly will the 24-team college football playoff take effect? It could arrive as soon as the 2027 season. The commissioners have until December 1st to notify ESPN of any changes to next year's format. And it's funny diving into a lot of what all of the coaches are talking about. Again, with Sumrall, with Clark Lee talking about the SEC championship, with Sumrall talking about feeling like coaches are a little bit alienated. Alex Golish has been pretty outspoken about this as well, essentially saying, this college football playoff has been the last thing that I've thought about in terms of the expansion or not. And he said, God bless anybody that is a part of the decision-making process, because I feel like, again, as outspoken as Coach Golish is, I feel like this is a fantastic time for him to kind of be a little bit quieter and soak in a lot of the information. Again, being one of the new guys on the block, he's not going to go and make a fool of himself in year one and piss off all the other SEC coaches and fan bases. But talked about, yeah, he doesn't want to really have any thoughts on what expansion is going to look like. And then the other day, a couple days after, he was talking with Paul Feinbaum, and a quote that I saw, he said, quote, I thought we were going to solve all the problems here on the first day. Well, I'm the last show on your guest here today, or on your show, the last guest on your show here today, and we haven't solved a thing. So seems that the SEC is doing a whole lot of absolutely nothing in terms of the decisions that are overall important for the future.
Yeah, I mean, granted, there's not much they can do as they are still inside the NCAA, and we'll talk about that later in the show. Some certain visor-wearing head coaches had thoughts on that. But looking at it, it's just a coaches' meeting. Like, they just go to the desk and they just kind of, hey, I'm the new guy. I'm Alex Golish. What's your name? Hey, I'm Pete Golding.
Hey, Alex.
Right. Like, I think that's a lot of what they do, and kind of see, like, the, You know, I remember the back in the day. I forget what year it was, but like the seating chart got leaked because it was like, Oh, is Jimbo Fisher going to sit next to Nick Saban? Or there was something. I cannot remember it. I want to know if Pete Golding and Lane Kiffin were near each other. Probably not, but maybe Lane was putting text in the group chat about him. I don't know, which I is the funniest thing ever. They have that, but I think looking at it, that they didn't get much done, and there's not much to get done because the SEC is not going to be it is the standard bearer, but it's not the decision maker, as we talked about earlier today.
Golish's quotes again, talking about the playoff size, saying, quote, "The amount of teams in the college football playoff is the last thing that I've thought about. Man, no one cares if I think it's 12, 16, or 24 teams. Whoever is figuring it out, God bless them." And I feel like that is a really good response, because obviously his job is different than other teams in the SEC, and his job is basically getting Auburn back on track because of the frustrations that we have had for quite some time. And so I think that is a really smart way of him going about it, and ultimately sitting there going, I understand that I'm not one of the power individuals right now in the conference. I am not the Steve Sarkisians. I am not the Kirby Smarts of the world. And so I'll sit this one out, and I'll go with whatever the majority says.
Hey, honestly, if I'm Alex Golish, I don't care what the playoff is, because I'm just going to be he needs to get Auburn, or wanting to get Auburn to a point where they do not have to worry about it, given it be 40 teams, 24 teams, 16, 12, 4, 2. As long as he wants to be the number one team in the country and bring back Auburn to that standard and make them be a perennial contender. So, and he's not going to worry about it. Just tell me if we're going to get a buy or not. That's got to be Alex Golish's mindset going into these meetings and hearing about it and what he's going to be telling the team.
All that we have asked for here on the show for quite some time, myself and Jacob as well, be in the conversation when November hits. Be delusional enough to think that you are one of the 28 teams in college football that deserves one of the 12 spots, at least as it stands right now, in the college football playoff. How many times have we heard it where, man, this team just has to control their own destiny? That's all we've asked for over the past couple of years, and Auburn has that opportunity based on what the win totals could and say they are for the Auburn Tigers, and maybe the dates that we announced a little bit earlier in the show could help that out just a little bit. We've talked a lot about the coaches and the quotes that they have made in terms of college football playoff expansion and just the future of the SEC in college football. We've agreed with some. We haven't necessarily agreed with others. And then there was Kirby Smart, who Tripp mentioned, the visor-wearing head coach, the former DB that resides in Athens, Georgia. He had a different way of going about it. You know, maybe we'll just break away. We'll talk about that when we come back as we wrap up hour number one. Before we dive into our full college baseball bracket show in hour number two, all of that here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
This is Ian Fitzsimmons from ESPN Radio, and you're listening to On the Line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. And we are wrapping up our football conversation here in hour number one because, my goodness, the amount of breaking news and just the amount of talking points that have come out of Miramar and Destin here over the past day and over the past 3 or 4 hours continues to be consumed by all of social media. And we wanted to wrap it up with one of the topics that has been halfway joked about over the past couple of years, but then gaining a little bit more traction. And Tripp, we talk all about how there has to be a legitimate spokesperson. There has to be somebody that is worthy of almost heading these conversations. And there's very few head coaches in college football that can do something like that. We talk about the Dabo Sweeneys of the world. We talk about the Nick Sabans a couple of years ago, the Kirby Smarts, the Ryan Days, the Dan Lannings, those type of guys that are more than likely and more than happy to put their face next to a very, very bold quote, and it come with a lot of legitimacy. When Kirby Smart this week was asked about the college football playoff and asked about the future of the SEC, he talks about wanting the SEC to maybe play by its own rules and how he would be perfectly fine if the SEC broke away from the NCAA. He says, quote, "I've been a huge advocate that if we can't find rules that everybody wants to play by, then we should just play by our own rules. I'm not afraid of doing that. I'm not afraid to break away, and I say that our conference is strong enough to go out and have and play." And he says, quote, "I mean, if we could actually function it and have it financially make it our programs, or make it to where our programs are more stable and we could support things financially, I am all about the sports and we could do it by our own rules, I would be all in support. I would be all for that." Kirby Smart's one of the first true leaders in this topic of conversation of the end of the beginning, or I guess the beginning of the end.
Yeah, I think that he is in a position to speak it. One of the only or two multinational champions currently coaching the sport. That's got to hold some weight. And I think he's not necessarily wrong. I'd be curious to see how the out of conference stuff would work out, like the, you know, clean old fashioned hate with Georgia Tech. That's an interesting one. What and or other requirements. But if the SEC was to break away from the NCAA, what's stopping them from – the 12-game limit isn't a hard rule. You know, the six bowl eligibility is not a hard rule. I mean, it's they could set their own rules. And, yeah, we're going to put 2-10 Vanderbilt or 3-9 Arkansas in a bowl game. Yeah, it doesn't fit in the NCAA's requirements, but we have our own requirements, and they fit ours. So that's what we're going to do. It would open up Pandora's box for what the SEC could retool the rules of the conference to make it to benefit their top teams and help them compete for a national championship.
There is, again, somebody – and there are these coaches in college football, and especially at SEC Media Days, where Kirby Smart is one of those guys that just seems like it frustrates him. Nick Saban was the exact same way. That entire tree treats SEC Media Days as very much as something they have to go to, not that they get to go to. And I'm sure as a coach, there are much better things that you would rather be able to talk about. But Kirby talked about saying, "I've been to this meeting now 10 or 11 times, referring to what the coaches are talking about this week down in Destin in terms of college football playoff expansion and the SEC championship and all of those things." He says, quote, "I've been to this meeting 10 or 11 times now, and it's frustrating at times to say, well, we can't do this because of litigation, or we can't do this because we'll get sued, so we can't risk doing that. And we're just trying to do things for the betterment of the sports and of the student athletes, and that is not curtailing what money they make. I'm not advocating that they can't just fund what student athletes make. I'm just trying to make it to where it's equal and it's comparable footing for everybody, and that it's not a race to the bottom, as they say." And so Kirby Smart, very much in favor of the SEC if that is something that they chose to do. And I'm sure that there would be support elsewhere as well. Again, plenty of conversations of the SEC and the Big Ten almost forming the AFC and NFC of the NFL, if you will, just in terms of breaking away, having their own funding, and it feels like it very easily could be the beginning of the end, not only for the NCAA, but for the SEC, for the Big Ten, and some of these power conferences.
Yeah, again, the ACCs and the Big 12s and the Notre Dames of the world are going to either have to sink to the bottom, and they're going to be a D2 effectively, or they're going to rise to the occasion, get that power invite, and play in the big boys leagues. And I hate to say that, but that's looking like what's going to happen.
If you can't beat them, join them. Why not? The best way to go about it. That puts a bow on a really, really fun hour in terms of college football. But it's time to flip over to the diamond. We have our full 64-team bracket for college baseball. We welcome in a guest to help us along the way as well. A really, really fun hour number two, breaking down every single regional, getting our Omaha 8 and our national champion. All of that coming up in hour number.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what Sports Talk Radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two. We're on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for being here with us. And my goodness, what a show it has been so far. A conversation dominated by college football in hour number one, and a really, really fun conversation in hour number two. If you missed any of hour number one, you can always check it out at our podcast center at ESPNAU.com. We talked, my goodness, all things, again, college football, SEC football, had a little bit of just about everything. We broke down what Kirby Smart talked about to end the hour in terms of wanting to be in support of breaking away from the NCAA, the SEC being big enough, being bad enough to support its teams, its players, and everything on that side of things. We talked a lot of the quotes from the college football expansion and the coaches that are in agreement for it. The coaches that are not so happy to have those types of conversations, and how there's a couple coaches that said that the SEC feels a little bit misled just based off of some promises of some conversations that were had of if the SEC went to a 9-game stop or a 9-game schedule, they're going to have 16 teams in the college football playoff. Well, we still sit at 12 right now. And then we started hour number one talking about the senators who have introduced a bipartisan college sports bill, talking about the Lane Kiffin rule, talking about 5 years of eligibility, talking about rules on professionals, whether those are overseas or whether those are in the United States, transfer portal changes, and a collective pool for media rights, as well as other decisions that may or may not be good based off of the SEC and the Big Ten's demand for control. All of that was in hour number one. And again, if you missed any of it, you can check it out at our podcast center at ESPNAU.com.
And in hour number two, not really much to set up here. We're talking baseball. We're talking college baseball bracket.
Boom.
And we're going to go through it all. Myself, Christian Griffin, and Jack Hudden, who should be arriving here momentarily.
Oh yeah, he's pulling into the parking lot as we speak. Man, we weren't. Sorry, buddy. Jack's actually sitting here in the studio right here, but his mic will turn on in just a few moments. But no, really, really excited to be able to dive into all 64 teams and our regionals. We're going to have our regional winners. We're going to have our super regional predictive pairings. We are going to have our Omaha 8 and then our national championship predictions. And so really, really fun coming up here in hour number two. But before we dive into that, we do want to have Again, a little bit of a reminder. Again, on Tuesday, June 9th, Auburn becomes host to a different kind of football. The Auburn Network is giving away tickets to see the defending World Cup champions, Argentina, as they take on Iceland inside Jordan-Hare Stadium. There will be opportunities to win tickets right here on the line and on the drive on ESPN 106.7. A pair of tickets given away on both shows every single day, yesterday through Friday again. So make sure to tune in throughout the hour for your chance to not only get the tickets to win, but then also the chance to see all of the action. Again, Argentina takes on Iceland on the path to the 2026 World Cup right here in Auburn inside Jordan-Hare Stadium. Kickoff set for 7:30. So again, you don't want to miss your chance to see it. And partner, I believe we are going a trivia question here that today we... Yesterday went to the code word, but I believe we're going to a trivia question. We'll let people know about that in a minute.
Yes, we will be able to do that and get it all set up so that we're able to do it. So no one's trying to call any early or any later. And once we have that, the phone lines will be closed up until that. And then once the answer is given and all the information and all that stuff, then they're closed again.
Again, it will be, we'll give a couple of hints. It will be Auburn trivia, it will be Auburn baseball, and it will be Auburn in terms of Omaha. And so we will give that to you here in just a few moments. And we'll give you more details about that. It will be the first caller that comes with the information, the correct information. We will get your name, your phone number, and your email, and we will be able to send those tickets your way for you to go check out Argentina and Iceland inside Jordan-Hare Stadium. But before we do that, before we dive into our full brackets, we welcome into the show Mr. Jack Hutton.
Hey,
welcoming
boys.
In.
What's going on?
Man,
hello.
Been here the entire time.
Yeah,
sorry.
I've just been waiting on you guys to pass it over to me.
Yeah, sorry that we've just now turned on the microphone, but happy you could join us. I know that this is, something that we talk about all season long. Man, we have a really fun conversation and a really fun show in terms of the March Madness projections and our full breakdown on that side of things. We've never really done a full one in terms of baseball, but what I say goes here this week. And so, by goodness, we're gonna have a dang college baseball selection
Let's
hour.
Let's have a dang show,
and it's
man.
Gonna have a we're gonna have a lot of fun doing it again. Trip up and Jack Hutton. I'm Christian Griffin here with you in the studio. Should be a very very fun hour number two.
Can I do my
Oh, yes. I do apologize. Yes.
God, Trip, what are you doing?
Dugout talk,
man.
I actually apologize. I thought you were giving your for March Madness, you usually, or maybe it's our Auburn football draft, that you give your opening ceremony speech for.
Oh, I see.
So I was not expecting baseball talk.
I can make one up on the off the top of the head.
I would love to just to set the mood. It's almost like the doom 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 doom.
Absolutely.
In terms, the draft call. We need something to almost, the pick is in terms of our regionals, but we need an opening ceremony speech from Mr. Jack Hutton.
Sure. We welcome you. We welcome you to the 2026
Hello friends.
NCAA baseball championship bracket that will culminate in Omaha, Nebraska in just about a month or so. What we hope is that our Auburn Tigers are there, but we're going to talk to you about what may happen on the way. We're going to talk to you about the journey ahead, and we're going to talk to you about what might be along that journey. Christian Griffin, Trip Upton, Jack Hutton, we're ready to go. Let's do it, fellas.
Man, well done.
Chills.
Well done, sir. I mean, there are people that say the journey is more exciting than the actual destination.
Some would say that, yes.
We are, in fact, going to talk a lot about the destination. And again, not as much the conversation in terms of the Auburn Regional today. That will be a part of tomorrow's show. And again, a reminder, you want to be a part of that. That's going to be really, really fun. There's been a lot of work that's gone into what we hope to continue to provide for the show in terms of some folks that have a little bit more knowledge than we do in terms of the teams that Auburn may see or that Auburn will play inside Plainsman Park. And so we hope that you will join us on that side of things tomorrow afternoon. But boys, let's dive into it. We are going to work our way clockwise just so that way the Auburn Regional, as they are considered on the bottom left side of the bracket, will be to wrap everything up here on the show. So we are going to start in the Los Angeles Regional, rightfully so, with the number one overall seed in terms of UCLA, St. Mary, Virginia Tech, and Cal Poly. Again, We will have to work relatively quick. We feel like with baseball, it's a little bit easier than diving into the full March Madness bracket. And Tripp, you have your 800 pages of notes. And so if you would like to start it off, get your thoughts out there initially in terms of just overall thoughts before we dive into a winner for the Los Angeles Regional.
Yeah, I mean, looking at UCLA, obviously they're number one RPI, number one in ERA. I mean, didn't play a lot of tough competition, only 11-1 in quad one. But I think that they're going to have the talent to be able to be at least to the regional final without really having to break a sweat. Looking at the other teams, though, Virginia Tech, a team that is a two, but when you're 10-5 in quad four, you just don't win games effectively. Looking as well as the bottom two teams, St. Mary's, they're top three nationally in batting average and hits, so they could 100% make a run and make a play to be able to upset one of these teams. And meanwhile, Cal Poly, a team that I really like in this regional as well, they did upset UC Santa Barbara in the Big West Tournament champs. But unfortunately, you know, got swept by Oregon State and USC in the regular season. Number 55 non-conference strength of schedule. So they played good teams. They're top 10 in hits. But again, I think this is UCLA region to tell you what I already feel about it.
I'll make this quick. I don't like Virginia Tech as a two seed.
No.
I think it's UCLA and Cal Poly playing for the regional, but I think that Cal Poly would have to beat UCLA twice. I don't think they do that. I don't think they beat them once. I like UCLA, as Tripp said, without too much of a sweat.
Here's the fun part about UCLA's season. They started off, actually, with two losses right out of the gate the first 2 weeks. And so since that time, they started, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So 6-2, they started out in their first 8 games. Since then, since that point, they have gone 45-4 the rest of the way.
Yeah.
And this UCLA team, I believe, is only the second team ever to go wire-to-wire number one. Is that correct?
That's correct. I think another interesting thing that you have to bring up about this team, though, is that they didn't close the year exactly how they wanted to. Now, they did win the Big Ten championship, so that's something that they wanted. But in their last 6 Pac-12 games, or not Pac-10, excuse me, Big Ten games.
Rest in peace.
Exactly. In those last 6 games, they went 4-2. Now, one of those was against Oregon, but then they got shut out at Washington, who is not a good ball club. I don't think that UCLA is going to come into this like sleepwalking or anything like that. But I'm just saying that at the tail beginning and ends of the season, it's been not quite dominance all the way out from UCLA. So watch out for that.
And when you look at, I mean, the Big Ten championship, it took a comeback against Purdue. It took a comeback against USC. And it took getting hit by a pitch with the bases loaded in the 11th inning to beat Oregon. And so there are a lot of talks on this UCLA team. I am not going to use the word fraudulent because,
goodness,
when you look at the talent, when you look at what they do, and getting 51 wins in a season is quite impressive. So I will not use that word. But there are a lot of people that do not consider this to be the national champion when everything is said and done. But I think all three of us relatively easily are going with UCLA. The team that they match up with is Morgantown, with West Virginia, Binghamton, Wake Forest, and Kentucky. Do the Cats, do the 3 seed in the SEC make a little noise? Or is it the best social media team in college baseball in Wake Forest that's able to possibly upset the Mountaineers in Morgantown?
I mean, looking at West Virginia, they are top 15 in ERA and in WHIP. They have decent wins over Liberty, Arizona State, Kansas, who was the Big 12 champion. So West Virginia is not a bad team, but looking elsewhere in this regional, you have Wake Forest. They've also beaten that Liberty team. But Wake Forest lost a lot of games to like Coastal, FSU, Georgia Tech. But with a guy like Chris Leovanis, who, you know, 2.9 ERA, 68 innings pitch, 10-3 is a starter, 110 strikeouts. If he's on the mound, Wake Forest expects to win that game. So if they can time up his start right, this team can make a run. Looking at Kentucky and Binghamton, really nothing crazy there. 1-2 in quad one, really just a quad four merchant. Their last tournament appearance, they made the Athens regional last year out of the American East. But I think with Kentucky, you said it, they really don't have great wins. St. John's, the Citadel, Alabama, and Tennessee are the kind of ones that I'm looking at for them. Losses to Morehead State, LSU, and Missouri. And a losing record in quad one and quad two. Maybe Jackson Jelkin, a guy with 98 strikeouts, 8-3 as a starter, 3.77 ERA, can make a play, but I don't see that happening. If you're asking me to pick, I think it's Wake Forest getting to the Super Regional but falling short to West Virginia.
Man, I have nothing to add to that. I mean, with Wake Forest, Reese Bowie is one of the best closers in the country right now. I don't think that's been necessarily the case the entire season, but he's a strikeout machine. I think he's been really good for them. I think he's been good at closing out games. West Virginia can really pitch it, and Kentucky has one really good starter in Jackson Jelkin, but I think this is Wake.
Oh. Trebby's telling you to mute the microphone so we can sneeze. Golly.
Sorry.
Golly. The hand signal's just not there.
I thought he was doing like he was doing with the clap. I thought it was like a part of the show.
looking at this Morgantown regional on my side of things, Wake Forest is 7-13 against tournament teams, and Kentucky is 2-8 in their SEC series, 2-8 in their 10. You mentioned they're really good starter, but I do not trust the depth that they have whatsoever. I think West Virginia a little bit frustrated being the number 16 overall seed in there as well. So I will take them real quickly before we head to break. Again, getting a little bit behind just by setting up the hour. Does Virginia or Jack State cause a little chaos in the Hattiesburg region?
I think Jacksonville State is going to win. I mean, they are, as a team in the CUSA, CUSA regular season and tournament champs, they're 8-7 in quad one. They have a winning record in all four quads. Yeah, they played a 186 non-conference strength of schedule. But I think that with this team, manager Steve Beiser, he's been there at Jacksonville State. They're going to avenge their loss in the Oxford Regional in 2019. I have Jacksonville State making it to the championship, knocking off USM right there. But I have Virginia actually getting swept. I think Little Rock wins a game. Yeah, they really haven't played well in quad one, but a close to 500 record in quad two. I think Little Rock with Chris Curry could make some noise there.
Boy, that's different from what I got. I got Virginia out of this thing, man. Jacksonville State, I love the story there. I think they can really swing it. I think that Southern Miss is going to be able to quiet the bats. I do think that a lot of these are going to come down to these 2-3 matchups that first day, because winning on that first day is so important. I think, Virginia's got a couple of dudes on the mound. I think they're going to throw at Jacksonville State. And I'm just not sure, just like Jacksonville State has done against, some of their CUSA opponents this season, I don't think they've seen the top level of a Power Five staff quite well. They've got wins over Auburn. They've got a couple of wins over some Power Five teams like that, but they're midweek teams.
Yep.
They're midweek starters. I think that's why I'm going to pick Virginia to get out of this one. They're going to send a Duke transfer named Henry Zatkowski to the mound, who's been electric. Really wanted Auburn to pick him up earlier, and that just wasn't in the cards with the Duke coaching staff coming over. But I think they're going to throw him against him, and I don't think that Jack State has seen anything like that this year. So that's why I've got Virginia and Southern Miss in that regional final, and then I got Virginia moving on.
How fun would it be, though, to just watch a Southern Miss Jacksonville State championship type of game? The winner goes to the Super Regional. I mean, it's two mid-majors that Jacksonville State, I'm sure they had an argument for trying to get into one of those host spots. Obviously not where Southern Miss is at, but just in terms of what they were able to do, had that stretch right after the second Auburn game where they lost a couple of frustrating games.
I mean, the RPI got up to 25 this season. I think it got as high as 21 there for a little while. And so, I mean, they were certainly knocking on the door of it and just needed a little more help. But, I mean, I think that they have a case if that strength of schedule gets a lot better. Their non-conference SOS was 186 this year. I think if that would have, if they would have scheduled a few more P5 teams and beaten them, they could have really had a shot at picking up a host bid like that.
It's funny you say that. I have Virginia as well moving on in my regional. But the Hattiesburg Regional may be the most fun to watch on TV just in terms of the chaos
Southern Miss brings. Southern Miss can really pitch.
They can pitch it, but then the environment as well. I mean, the ballpark absolutely flies, and they pack out the stadium from foul pole to foul pole. Real quick, as we got to get to break, does any team challenge Florida? I know there's a couple teams that talk about Miami, Troy in that conversation as well, but does Florida get challenged in this?
I think Troy makes a run. I think that they could 100% pull maybe an early upset against Florida, but I think Florida's going to come back to win it. I mean, Troy, number three non-conference strength of schedule, a top 35 team RPI, but I think Florida, they're going to put Brendan Lawson. He's just a great batter, 16 home runs, 43 RBIs. I think that Kevin O'Sullivan and the Gators win the regional and avenge their embarrassing loss last year in Conway.
The Troy – no, just kidding. Florida is hotter than any team right now, especially at the plate. Maybe outside of Arkansas and Georgia.
Yeah.
But I think that that's one of the hottest offenses in the country right now. Aiden King's going to go out there. He'll shove the first game, and then they'll all you'll do is just throw out Liam Peterson the second day or whoever you're getting. And so that's a tough 1-2 punch for anybody to come back from, especially with how that offense is swinging it right now. I don't see anybody getting by Florida.
No, Florida has a saying that the Gator boys stay hot, and you mentioned it. They may be one of the hottest teams in the country. 2 weeks ago, they were somewhat comfortable just in the hosting conversation. They're now in a spot to host a Super Regional.
Troy got a few that can swing it, though. Jimmy Janicki's one that is a sophomore that's coming up that's batting real well for them this season. Stephen Meyer, a former Auburn transfer, Drew Nelson, plays for that Troy team, not pitching for the Trojans this year, actually one of their starting outfielders. So interestingly, kind of how that career has shifted a tad. But yeah,
Troy's got some guys. Way.
That's right. Yeah, Troy's got some guys that can swing it, but and could make a little noise. But I think this is Florida's regional.
So three of us agree on three teams: UCLA, West Virginia, and Florida. Jack and I have Virginia. Trip has Jacksonville State moving on. We're a quarter of the way down. We move to the right side of the college baseball field of 64 tournament, bracket, show, selection, whatever you want to call it. It feels like there are so many different ways to describe this. But we're having a really fun time here. We're back right after this here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
War Eagle, this is Auburn baseball coach Butch Thompson, and you're on the line in Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We are back here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line, making our official brackets for college baseball and the road to Omaha. We finished up the top left side of the bracket, all three of us going UCLA, West Virginia, and Florida. Trip went Jacksonville State. Myself and Jack went Virginia out of the Hattiesburg region. We moved now to the top right rather quickly here as we have a couple of minutes before the music will kick us out of here. Does Georgia Tech struggle at all? Oklahoma makes a little bit of a challenge. The Citadel, one of those teams that could make a little bit of noise, but in a ballpark like the Jackets have, the ballpark absolutely flies. And when you're playing the best offense in the country, I don't really expect that to go anywhere. I like the Jackets to cruise.
Yeah, number one in batting average, OBP, slugging, OPS, hits, runs, RBIs. That's Georgia Tech. Von Lackey, who can play any position on the diamond, is going to be a big factor, along with Drew Burris, the all-time home run leader at Georgia Tech.
I think Oklahoma, the only way they're going to win this is if they get really, really good pitching. And I think they've got to be able to hit it out of the ballpark more than they do. That'll happen at Georgia Tech just because that ballpark is, I mean, the trees are magnets out there for home run balls. So I do think that they'll hit for a little more pop like that. But, you know, Georgia Tech being in that ballpark is insane, man. I mean, it is so hard to stop them. Georgia Tech is not they've got some dudes who can throw it, but they're not really going to beat you with pitching. They're just going to outscore you. So I think that if you can limit them to, you know, 7 or 8 runs and have a big day from your offense, you can do it. We saw Mercer go up there and beat them earlier this year. We saw North Carolina hold them off. I know that's a great North Carolina team, but I think they got the blueprint on them. We saw Auburn do it too. You got the blueprint on them, but it's hard to do.
I was listening to the ACC tournament announcers, and they were talking about Georgia Tech's pitching staff and the lack of stress and how, yeah, we could give up a 3-run home run in a couple of innings, and you walk back to the dugouts, and it's like, don't worry, buddy. We got you in this next half inning, yep. And I feel like that is a big-time luxury. So all three of us in the Georgia Tech side of things, before the music kicks us out of here. Oh, are you not going Georgia Tech?
No, I am. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to need convincing on why Arkansas is not walking away here.
I'm not going to do that. I have the Hogs beating not even Kansas. I think Missouri State in the final. Kansas, fine team. I mean, made it to the Fayetteville region last year. But I think looking at this team, they really haven't been challenged all year. Number 60 strength of schedule. Yeah, sure, they're 11-6 in quads 1 and 2, but I just don't see it from the Jayhawks.
This is a really boring show, man. I got the Hogs moving on from Lawrence. They're swinging it better than any team in the country right now. I mean, Ryder Helfrich went 0-16 and then just popped a 450-foot dinger against Ryan Hetzler the other night.
Yeah.
And they continued to hit home runs. Zach Skinner's been phenomenal for them. I just don't think that this is going to end well for anybody except for Arkansas there.
No, the Jayhawks are not very happy that they have to see Dave Van Horn again. And the Razorbacks are relatively pissed off that they are not in the hosting conversation. And so I think they are trying to make their home Lawrence, Kansas for quite some time.
Going to have to hit some balls into the backyard. Did y'all see that? Kansas is making beyond their left field fence. Taking out a bunch of trees, getting all the fencing down to just chain link so you can see through it, and they're going to let people back there for the regional.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Kansas.
I love seeing the ballparks in Auburn, obviously being one of them. Talked a lot about that yesterday. But the ability to make changes like that for a regional, knowing there are more teams, and respectfully, Kansas needs it. Their ballpark does not hold too many people.
College baseball regionals, I mean, it is the most fun time of year outside of football, because you are outside, you have the same atmosphere going. It's really fun, it's really big. I think it's so underrated, and good job for Kansas for doing that.
Arkansas, moving on. According to all three of us, we continue working our way down the right side of the bracket and the road to Omaha when we come back.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
Spring is right around the corner, and University Ace has everything you need to get ready for the season. Power through your outdoor projects with top-tier equipment from trusted brands like Steel and Ego. And as the temperatures rise, fire up the flavor with our unbeatable selection of grilling essentials, including premium grills from brands such as Weber, Traeger, Big Green Egg, and much, much more. Start your spring season off the right way. Visit us at University Ace Hardware, located at 2101 East University Drive.
We're halfway through hour number 2. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We're back here on ESPN 106.7, halfway through hour number 2, halfway through, or just about halfway through, our picks on the road to Omaha. Nice work, Trip.
I got a phone call from a spam number.
Ma'am.
Oh, a spam number. That's what it is.
Ma'am. Mom, I'll call you later. I'm on the line right now.
She's listening. She knows better.
Well, again, we continue on the right side of the bracket right now. We both went, or all three of us went, Georgia Tech and Arkansas, which we joked over the break. Arkansas, it would be the most Razorback thing ever to go in there and lay an egg, since they are the most popular 2-seed to knock off a regional host. And Arkansas, it would just make their fan base implode, which is very relatable on the Auburn side of things. Not in terms of the regional, but just in terms of the overall frustration. Our good buddy Ty Richardson of ESPN Arkansas, man, we have conversations just about how similar everything is. And It better not happen for Auburn, and it might not happen for Arkansas either. But we move on to the Tallahassee Regional, and this is one that has a lot of people drawing a blank in terms of, man, there are two really, really good teams, and there's another that's known for basketball that may make a little bit of noise in there as well. The Johnnies, Coastal Carolina, and Florida State. Jack, we'll start with you. Your thoughts on the Seminoles hosting a healthy Chanticleers team and then a Rick Pitino-less St. John's team, because that's the other sport.
Yeah, interesting. So these,
believe it or not,
you got two squads. Obviously, Auburn fans are familiar with one of these, Coastal Carolina, that comes in here and just seemingly every year.
How nice is it, too? Sorry to cut you off, that we are not playing Florida State.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Not in Tallahassee and not paired up with them either. So fortunately, Auburn, the road is not going to have to go through Tallahassee if they take that road. St. John's has got a chance in this 1-4 matchup. I think they got a chance. They're going to send out starter Liam O'Leary, who has a 1.12 whip. The only problem is not really a strikeout guy. He's more of a pitch to contact. And when Florida State's making contact, they do it really well, especially at home. So I do think that Florida State still wins that one. But I think St. John's has enough pitching to maybe win one game and kind of put some frustration in somebody's camp. I know it's kind of boring, but I think I got the Noles coming out of here. I think they'll beat Coastal Carolina on the second day. I think this may go to a game seven, but I do think that they'll get by Coastal. Cam Flukie's going to pitch at least once, but then after that, you're done with him. And you've already had all these guys from Coastal move on to the major leagues that went through Auburn last year. So I'm picking the Noles in this one, but I think there could be some fun stuff happening.
I think it's Coastal Carolina. I mean, when you look at it, when you have the number one non-conference strength of schedule, you're battle-tested. I feel like as I did my research, every single team I looked at was loss. Like, biggest losses, Coastal Carolina, every single time. And looking at it, Kevin Schnall, now this is assuming he's not taking the South Carolina job and taking his eye off the ball. If they are locked in and he's locked in there, the runner-up from last year, I think, gets it done. Fun fact, I'm not going to talk about Northern Illinois because I don't think that they're anything special. Last postseason appearance, 1999 in the West Regional. So before the expansion, I definitely think that Florida State has some potential. They've played tough competition. I mean, when your RPI is number 8, but losing record in quad one, not fancy numbers outside of that. I'm going to go Coastal Carolina because there's something in the water in Conway, South Carolina during postseason play.
I'll say this. If Florida State gets into a close one at the end with St. John's in that first game, St. John's has got a closer named Evan Hochul that has become their closer here in the season. He's got 7 saves, 38 strikeouts in 32 innings. I think he's a guy that can close things out. So you may want to go ahead and end that one early if you're Florida State.
I like it. You got to get there, though, if you can. Obviously,
sure
that's
the
toughest thing about it. I'm going to go Florida State in this. Feels relatively chalk, but I think Cameron Flukie, I would imagine him, it makes it confuse, or makes it difficult because it's like, do you use him on Friday or do you use him in the weekend and try and save him? I would imagine they try and lock down at least one of those wins to try and get to a series. And I think if you do that, I think Florida State really likes where they are at, especially playing at home at that ballpark. I will take Florida State on that side of things as well. And they are patched up with the Tuscaloosa Regional, Alabama State, Oklahoma State, who's known for a wild hair or two in the college baseball postseason and doing it at SEC ballparks, and South Carolina Upstate. Upstate being one of those teams, I don't know if you were able to listen at all yesterday, Jack, but 15 of the 64 teams, we used Alex Golish's 250-mile recruiting radius. 15 of the 64 teams are 250 miles away from Auburn in that radius.
No kidding.
So you talk about the best baseball being in the South.
Yeah.
South Carolina Upstate was one of those teams, funny enough. But I guess 3 of those teams are in this Tuscaloosa Regional. Who do you like in there?
I know people are going to say, well, it's just because you're an Auburn fan. I got the Cowboys out of here, man. I got the Pokes taking down Tuscaloosa. Look, I think this Cowboy offense – They've gotten hot at the right time. Not only that, but they've actually done it all year. They've got three guys that have an OPS of over 1,000 on the season, and all of those guys have 14 or more home runs. You've also got Brock Thompson hitting right at 310 home runs, 988 OPS. This is a team that can swing it. Now, past about 6-9 in their order, they tend to kind of fall off there, but I think they're going to be able to generate enough up front. I don't know if Alabama's pitching is going to be able to carry them all the way through this Oklahoma State offense, especially if they get some good outings from their guys on the mound. They've got a lot of high strikeout guys, so I think they're playing well at the right time. I do think Alabama is kind of faltering here late, and I think that that could wind up getting the Tide. Now, that may be wishful thinking on my part, but I got the Pokes out of this one.
I want to agree with you. I really do, because I do like Oklahoma
Not
State.
Not so fast, my friend.
But, I mean, looking at it, I mean, Alabama has pretty solid wins. They swept Auburn. They made some noise in the SEC. Not enough where you're saying this is a top four team, but enough where they're hosting a national seed. They also played solid non-conference team with a number 19 non-conference schedule. Their RPI number 6. 14-9 in quad one. I think that speaks for itself. I want to go Oklahoma State, but I just don't think they're tested enough to do so. So I'm going to unfortunately have to go Alabama.
When doing my research, looking at this Tuscaloosa regional, again, man, I love what Oklahoma State, they went to Athens last year and knocked off Georgia in a regional that nobody really talked about. Everybody thought that it was Georgia that was just going to cruise, and Oklahoma State made it hell for the Dogs and ultimately walked away victorious. When doing my research, again, I do not, I think the Alabama pitching staff is fine. I don't trust their offense. Mm-mm. I think it is very scary. You're second to last in terms of batting average, right around 254. And I think most regionals, you will happily take the better pitching staff to get the job done. But there are certain ones that falter against what is supposed to happen. I feel like this is a regional that you could see something like that. And the thing that I have here is that Alabama is 1-11 in games where their opponents score eight or more runs. Oklahoma State's offense is able to do that in every single game.
They score a ton of runs, man.
And Oklahoma State's staff is good enough to where if they get a lead, it's kind of similar to Georgia Tech of, yeah, you can give up one or two because we're going to get those runs back. I'm going to go the Cowboys as well. I am going to go Oklahoma State.
Watch out for Colin Ritchie in that regional. 29 home runs on the season, looking for 30. That would be, I can't remember many 30 home run seasons in college baseball outside of J.D. Drew.
We're working our way, sticking in the SEC, the number 6 overall seed in Texas, hosting Holy Cross, UC Santa Barbara, and Tarleton State. If you want to talk about a regional that has absolutely four people talking about it, it's five now, or I guess seven now that us three are talking about it. Your thoughts on the Austin regional and if Texas can survive Santa Barbara?
I think they do. I think Santa Barbara is a good team. They've played tough competition, however, slipped up near the end of the season, did not win the Big West Championship Tournament. And Texas, I think their pitching staff is just too good right now. They can win solid games. I mean, 11-5 in quad one, 14-5-1 in quad two. Jim Schlossnagel doesn't lose these type of games, and I'm going to go Texas, barely edging out UC Santa Barbara. I don't think Holy Cross or Tarleton State make any noise either.
I tend to agree here. UC Santa Barbara is not playing super well to end the season. They got a series loss to Cal State Fullerton kind of late. Fullerton's not very good this year. Dropped a game to UC Irvine, who's also not playing very good ball this season. In the games where UC Santa Barbara's gone up against really good teams, they've got a win over USC on the year, and they got one win over Oregon, but that was in a three-game set. Outside of that, they did the first game of the year, they went into Southern Miss. They won a game there, but it just hadn't won many big games since that time. Oh, you do have a win over UCLA back in April, so that's pretty nice. I just think from that time when they played Fullerton, since then, they've then dropped more low RPI games, and so I don't know if they're playing their best ball right now. I don't think Texas is either, but I think Texas being at home is enough to get him out. Unlike last year, which if you remember, UTSA comes out of that regional.
Roadrunners.
Yeah, I don't think I think Texas is able to walk through this. Aiden Robbins, who didn't make friends when he was in Plainsman Park, did for one game, but then not as much the rest of the weekend. one of the best bats in the SEC, and you mentioned one of the best pitching staffs as well. Every single one of those guys, it feels like they're 7-4 and above, and all throw at 118 miles an hour. I think it'll be too much. I think Texas moves on. Working quickly, we got to make up a little bit of ground here. Give me your winners. Give me your favorites, and just a stat or two, because we still got to get our Omaha 8 and then our national champion as well. Anybody that takes down Oregon, does Yale make any noise? Oregon State?
Oregon State, and partially that's because I think Oregon is despicable for canceling non-conference games to keep their RPI up. Yes, they are 12-10 in Quad 1, but outside of that, they really haven't played a ton of tough competition. Lost in Eugene last year. I think for Mark Wasikowski, that continues. I think the Beavers, even as an independent, played better competition, and I think Oregon State is able to win. Fun fact about Yale, though, did not play a single Quad 1 or 2 game. 0-0 in both.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't care. Yale out of this regional.
Really?
Jack Oman, Tate Evans, Daniel Cohen, Ben Winslow. This team can pitch it. I don't know about their hitting. I don't know how it's going to hold up, but I think they get game one against Oregon. I think that then Washington State and Oregon State get into a bit of a hay fight there, but eventually Oregon State takes that. I think Jack Oman gets the ball in game two of that one, shoves against the Beavers in a park where Oregon fans are going to be there cheering against Oregon State probably, and Yale finds a way to get through this. Give me the 4 seed out of Eugene.
Man. The Pac-12 regional, rest in peace. Funny enough, I have Yale beating Oregon in game one. Ivy Leagues, man, the pitching is always absolutely incredible. Well, every guy has that starter. You mentioned a couple of the others, but I think Oregon State's able to outlast Yale in that winner's bracket, but I think Yale ends up making a little bit of noise in the loser's bracket. I do see it being Oregon State and Oregon, though, and I think that Oregon State, the Beavers, are going to make their way out of it. Real quick before we head, we got a little bit more time here. Stark Vegas, does Lipscomb make their way from Nashville, Tennessee, or Cincinnati, a team that Auburn saw earlier in the season, in Louisiana? Anybody giving States a run for their money here in the Starkville Regional?
Cincinnati. I am believing in the Bearcats. They've played solid competition. Jordan Bushell is going to have this team ready to go, and they're going to avenge their loss in the Knoxville Regional. I think that Mississippi State has just been too hot, too cold. It doesn't matter if they're in their own ballpark or not in their own ballpark. Year one under Brian O'Connor ends in Starkville. They have a losing record in Quad 1. I think that, and they really haven't played anybody outside of the SEC. Played tough SEC competition, but I'm going to go Cincinnati.
I'll tell you, look out for a team in this regional, the Raging Cajun.
Yeah.
They
mm-hmm.
can pitch the ball, man. They can throw it. I'm thinking about what you're thinking about over there, Christian. I don't think that's going to happen, but I do think this is a 1-3 regional final. I think the Cajuns are going to be there, but I think Mississippi State takes it in the end just because past their first two guys, don't know if they have the starter, but I'm telling you, the Cajuns can pitch it out of the bullpen, man. And they've got two starters that can do it, too.
I think this, funny enough, becomes almost a Starkville cakewalk just because of what they're able to do to Lipscomb. I think it'll be a dogfight. I think State takes it in the winner's bracket against Louisiana, but I think they find their way back, like you're saying. I think it's a 1-3, but I don't think Louisiana has enough to match in three games. I'll take Mississippi State to move on. One more before we get to our final break. One word. You ready? 1, 2, 3. Georgia. Okay, cool. We actually do have more time for that.
Georgia, Boston College, Liberty, and Long Island. I don't see any way anybody else makes it out of this. Boston College can swing it okay. Liberty can pitch. They got a guy, Ben Blair, who is probably going to be an MLB draft pick, but I don't think there's anything here. Georgia wins this by hitting a bunch of home runs.
Real quickly, College Station, Texas A&M, Lamar, USC, and Texas State.
Let me go down because I was at my Georgia notes.
Well, I'll do it.
Yeah, you got it. Go ahead.
USC, Mason Edwards leads the Trojans through there. I know they hadn't performed too well in Quad 1 games this season, but I think USC is able to put it together against this Texas A&M lineup.
Really? Mm-hmm. Wow. A team that's very frustrated that they are not in the regional conversation.
Correct.
Or I guess the super regional conversation.
Okay, you say, oh yeah, we haven't performed well in Quad 1. They're tied for last in their region in Quad 1 wins with a singular Quad one win for USC. I just think Texas A&M is going to take advantage of the, quote, little league ballpark over there. Yeah, they did. They, you know, smaller strength of schedule, losing record in quad one, but they played well quads two, three, and four. USC, I just don't think that, and, you know, Texas State's not going to do anything. So I'm going to go Texas A&M outlasting a USC that's going to come from, they're going to beat them once, but not twice.
Funny enough, Texas State split with A&M in the regular season, but again, you mentioned it, those were midweek starts, and I think Texas A&M has a good enough staff. I think Bluebell Park is one of the most fun places to watch and enjoy a college baseball game. I think A&M walks its way into the Super Regional. And with that, we will take our final break. We'll come back and quickly go through again Lincoln and Auburn, diving a little bit more into that tomorrow. We will get you a very quick recap of our Omaha 8 and give you our World Series winner. All of that when we come back and wrap up the Wednesday edition of On the Line next.
This is Amber from Amber and Ian. You're listening to On the Line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
All right, we're back, and rather quickly working our way through the college baseball road to Omaha. We have one final regional left outside of again, Lincoln and Auburn, who we will leave for tomorrow in the deep dive with those eight teams. But Chapel Hill, the five seed, the Tar Heels, who are frustrated they're not a top four. Does North Carolina walk out of victorious, or are you favoring your SEC talents in Tennessee?
I'm taking Tennessee. I mean, top 15 in slugging, top 8 in home runs, top 10 in whip. I mean, they've played a lot of tough competition. And I've been saying it all year, I'm not a North Carolina guy. They really didn't have any signature wins outside of that Georgia Tech series and competing against an NC State team that many people believe should not have been in the tournament anyway. So I'm taking the Vols to win it over ECU in the final. I think North Carolina goes home a little bit early.
Going back on what I may have just told you, I think, Christian, I don't know if I want to do this or not. North Carolina's a favorite here, I know. If Tennessee gets out of that 2-3 matchup, they'll be throwing Tegan Coons. It'll be against Sean Jenkins. That'll be a great matchup on Friday night. Oh, what do I think here?
I'll give you two more seconds.
Stick with it. North Carolina.
I'll give you two more seconds to make your pick. I'm going to go UNC. I'm going North Carolina. Okay.
Sorry.
Quickly, we have about a minute for each of us before the music kicks us out of here. No time to break down the Super Regionals. Give me your Omaha 8, and then we will leave the national champion, the College World Series winner for when the music kicks us out of here. Real quickly, give me your top 8.
UCLA, Georgia Tech, Georgia, Auburn, Texas A&M, Texas, Jacksonville State, Coastal Carolina. I think that they, four SEC teams and then four teams that kind of all, you know, Georgia Tech and UCLA have been the consensus 1 and 2, and then Coastal Carolina, Jacksonville State, just to add some chaos, you always got to have one in there. And looking at them, I can't in good conscience put Alabama and Omaha, and I think Florida, even though they're hot, they can 100% beat Jacksonville State. I've seen enough on watching that Gamecock team. I think they get it done.
I have UCLA. I have Florida. I have North Carolina. I have the Auburn Tigers. I have Georgia. I have, who else do I have? I have Texas, and then I have the Oklahoma State Cowboys. Oh, and then I have Georgia Tech as well.
And State?
State who?
Mississippi State.
No. Georgia beats them in
the that's right. Sorry. Yes, good call. I also, UCLA, I am looking at Florida. I am looking at Georgia Tech. I am looking at Florida State. I'm looking at Georgia. I am looking at Texas A&M. And I am looking at Auburn. So those are our Omaha 8. Man, a lot of SEC teams sprinkled in that. Makes it a very fun, almost a free-for-all type of Hoover tournament with a couple of other teams mixed in there. All right. Pick a number between 1 and 1, Trip.
1.
Okay, you're first. Give me your thoughts on who is winning the College World Series.
I think that it's going to be one of the best pitching teams in the country against one of the best hitting teams in the country. We've already seen this game take place twice, and Frankly, this just would happen, and I'm rooting for this to happen because you know who wins? I win. Give me Georgia Tech v. Auburn in the championship, and the Uptons just come out on top.
Said that with a lot of energy here on Auburn Radio. Man, I tell you what.
But I think Auburn I think Auburn wins that, but
okay, there we go. Okay. All right, Jack.
It's hard to pick anybody but UCLA, I know. I feel like I kind of have to pick Auburn just to I'll do a head and a heart pick. My heart pick is Auburn. I think my head pick, if I'm just sticking to what I know, UCLA's been the most complete team all year. They can pitch it, they can hit it. They got MLB draft picks. I'm going to go chalk and go UCLA.
Beating?
Ooh, beating. I don't know. Georgia. Beating Georgia.
It'd be a really fun College World Series. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. It's one of those things where you sit there and hype it up and you let everybody else talk and you still haven't given too much thought. So now I'm going to come up with something really, really confidently. My heart pick is obviously Auburn. I mean, in terms of what they're able to do, will the offense feast or famine, or will they be able to find a way to get true consistency? Man, I love them in three games. I think Auburn makes it. I really, really do. I think they run into a couple of buzzsaws. I think it makes its way to three games. I'm going to take Georgia Tech over Auburn in the national championship. I think that Georgia Tech makes its way out of the loser's bracket as well. I think their offense stalls in one game, but I think they're able to get it back, and what a fun College World Series that would be.
Auburn with the low whip that they have, Georgia Tech with the home runs they hit, got to be a fun
one of those strength-on-strength, one of those things has to give. Well, we're back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Don't you dare miss it. We're giving away two sets of tickets tomorrow since we couldn't do it today. For Jack Hudden, for Trip Upton, I'm Christian Griffin. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.